Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today Maestro Dion Buhaja. Just a few words about my guest. He studied counterpoint and orchestration with Carmelo Parch, and piano, organ and harmony with Reverend Carmelo Sherry and P. Albert Borge OSA. Later, he studied with Professor Richard Latham at the Royal College of Music, London, where he obtained his ARCM. From the University of Toronto in Canada, he earned a Bachelor in Music and the postgraduate degree B.Ed. In Music Pedagogy. On a Commonwealth Book Scholarship, he then obtained his Master's in Music degree from the University of Western Ontario, London, Ontario, Canada. He then went on to read for his PhD with a project developed with Professor Floyd Grave, the head of the Postgraduate Music Department at Rutgers University, New Jersey in the USA. He's very active in many different fields. He is now Professor at the University of Malta and is also Maestro di Cappella of the Mdina Cathedral and St. John's Cathedral in Valletta. Maestro Buhaja is a skilled organist and, of course, conductor with a particular interest in old Maltese music, which he edits and presents in revival concerts. As a choir master, he has founded the Collegium Musicum, the Collegium Aureum, and the University Vocal Ensemble. With all these choirs, he has presented numerous outstanding concerts, and I can certainly vouch for that because I've heard many of them and enjoyed them greatly. Dr. Buhaja is an organist of technical ability, of course, extensive repertoire and sensitive interpretational skills, which he honed while studying in Toronto with Professor Douglas Bodle. I hope I pronounced that's his name right. He is an outstanding, obviously, internationally acclaimed interpreter of Baroque music. As a composer, his oeuvre for primary vocal music is mainly determined by the liturgical services and national functions held in the two cathedrals in Malta. In 1989, his oratorio Lania Tarepha, with the text by national poet Duncan Psyla, was commissioned by the Ministry of Culture in celebration of Malta's independence. As we saw from your brief bio, you spent many years in Canada furthering your studies. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about your Canadian experience, the studying, the professors you worked with, and the experience in general.
There is much to say about that. That was in 1973, August 15. And I remember clearly that even the jet aircraft that we went to Canada with was named Arcangelo Corelli, who is one of the most prominent Italian Baroque composers.
So it bode well.
I could see it from my window all the time, Arcangelo Corelli. So there you are, on a musical plane arriving in Toronto. At first, of course, it was a cultural shock because things were different from what we are used here. But then after searching around for what I wanted to do with myself as a musician, I met the proper person, and which I still believe until today that was providential for me to be there. And you mentioned his name already, Professor Douglas Bodle. And to be short, of course, I went to audition because he was the dean of the organ department at the Faculty of Music, University of Toronto, which was named after a famous metropolitan tenor, Edward Johnson. In fact, they used to call the faculty Edward Johnson Building. So I met Douglas Bodle, Professor Douglas Bodle, the dean of the organ department, and I auditioned because I was advised that my best choice would be to go to the Faculty of Music of the University of Toronto. It was not an easy decision for me because I was married at that time, still had no children, But of course, I had to discuss this option with my wife, Vivian, and she was all for the idea that I should go. To be short, I auditioned. I was accepted to be the student of this Professor Douglas Bowlell. Then he prepared me because he saw that I was lacking in some special technical matters in terms of organ performance, because he was a specialist in organ technique, especially with regard to the interpretation of Baroque music, Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach, and all the contemporaries, but especially Bach. And in fact, I learned so much from him, and that's why I keep believing that it was providential. So, 6 months of individual coaching from him, I was ready to sit for another audition to join the music studies of the Faculty of Music, Edward Johnson Building of the University of Toronto. So I did that audition. I was successful, thanks to him. And of course, I joined the faculty starting in 1974. That is the year after I arrived in Toronto. So that took me 4 years of full-time study. My major, because they call in that part of the world, your instrument, they call it your major. My major was, of course, the organ. And so that was my satisfaction, great satisfaction, because I was now knowing that I was studying with a very serious person, who knew all about the organ. He knew most of the major organists in the whole world. He knew their advantages, their techniques, and so on, including, for example, Fernando Germani, who was one of the main organists in Europe. He was the organist at that time. Now he's there, of course, the organist of St. Peter's in the Vatican. And he knew him, too, very well, in fact, and he sort of made comparisons of techniques which was characteristic of Fernando Germani and characteristic of other schools. And so I consider myself to have understood for the first time the real instrument, because he used to tell me, for example, you play. I used to play a phrase, then he plays it after me, and I used to notice a great difference, and I used to ask him, what are you doing? And that was the point. What was he doing? And he showed me during those 4 years, of course, with great patience, what was he doing? And then, of course, with persistence, I understood, and now I can see, actually, when I listen to my playing, because he taught me also to listen to my playing, what he was after. So that was the major, but there are other courses which I benefited from, for example, harmony, counterpoint, orchestration, history, musicology, analysis, conducting, of course, and conducting was not done just by listening to a CD. You conduct the orchestra, because the faculty orchestra was a very big orchestra, and you could also benefit from that experience. I was lucky, just the last idea, to have been there, because at that time, these are the 70s we're talking about, there were many professors who were escaping from behind the Iron Curtain, and they were the best Russian professors with whom I was lucky enough to study, for example, composition, harmony. The professor of harmony, for example, was a Russian, Walter Bushinsky, I still remember his name, and he used to give me A's, for example, in harmony. He liked my harmony so much. And I was lucky to have studied even harmony with him, because he had studied in his own young days, postgraduate probably, at the Paris Conservatoire. Mm-hmm. And he was lucky enough to have studied with one of the major exponents of harmony at the Paris Conservatoire, who is now dead, and she was Professor Nadia Boulanger. When you say Boulanger, you cannot go further.
gosh, the tops. So your Canadian experience was obviously, I mean, to say formative would be reductive. And,
and that was the first, and then the second degree BA. Then, because then I came back in 1979, and then I went, as you have said, on a Commonwealth scholarship, and I spent another 2 years in another big university in Canada, and that was another experience. That's where I discovered Francesco Azzopardi from their own computers.
Really?
Yes.
How interesting.
I was, the computer had just come in those days. Probably we didn't even have, because actually my master thesis was typed on a computer. It used, the software used to be called Word Perfect, I remember. We didn't have that here in Malta, so it was done there, and I used to see the beauty of this sort of computer typing and whatever software. And I was looking in the library on their computer catalog, and Azzopardi, I said, Azzopardi, and there it came with all the holdings they had in the library. We didn't have even that possibility here.
Incredible.
So I had to go abroad to discover my...
Yes, well, going abroad is always a serendipitous experience. For some time now, though, you've been immersed in the composition of an oratorio, rather a long work, slightly under 2 hours, I understand,
which
was commissioned for a centenary celebration. Tell us a little bit about the way you go about the creative process and how that then translates into performance. And then hopefully we'll hear a bit from Christo Sultan.
As you're saying, I was commissioned to do this oratorio. Yes, it turned out to be quite long, but that depended much on the text, of course, and the text was by Professor Oliver Frigieri, who is a great friend of mine, because we used to be studying in our young days at the seminary together. You can only read the Fiori Lumai in Sfuscio, and you see us, we are all in there. And anyway, I am greatly influenced and my inspiration very much excited by his text, the way he writes the text. As soon as I start reading his text, I start hearing the notes immediately. Okay. That's the effect that I feel when I read Oliver's text. So I was faced with this Christo Sultan, and as soon as I started reading through the various sections, which he indicates, he goes into great detail. For example, he indicates, here I want a soloist, here I need a group, so a choir. And all you need is, from the text, I have to see, or the character itself. For example, we see, oh, here is the, I put a mezzo-soprano, the Holy Mary, or here a soprano who is representing the soul, for example. One scene which struck me was the dialogue, which was almost a soliloquy, but dialogue between Mary when she was still with Jesus in her womb, and she was speaking to him, and at that point I was listening, I was hearing this mezzo-soprano and myself with the melody and the harmony and the orchestration that is, and then one can hear actually what the result was of that dialogue between Mary and Jesus. So, and it goes on like that. For example, there was the dialogue between Pilate and Jesus. Jesus was most eloquent in this oratorio by his silence, as we all know from the Gospels. But Pilate was pictured here in the oratorio like he was the powerful politically, but at the same time in front of Jesus, who was so weak. And I had to find the proper voice, which I put a tenor, not a tenor because it's a weak voice, but it's I reserved the bass or bass baritone for Jesus, of course, because he was all powerful. In fact, I gave him a couple of arias when he was sort of talking alone in the Gethsemane, and that's the bass voice comes so strong and so eloquent. So Pilate was confused, and the melody and the rhythm again depicts that sort of weakness within that sort of Roman general who, in front of Jesus, He was asking for help, in fact.
And when you actually came to perform, because if you're in your study at home, your studio, and you're reading the text and you're, as you say, hearing the music already and writing it, when it comes to actually transferring that into a performance, how do you manage to get, these are professionals, obviously professional singers, but how do you manage to sort of marry what you had in your mind with actually what appears in the performance?
The most important thing is that all your ideas are put into the language of the notation. Notation, harmony, counterpoint, orchestration, the different types of instruments, all these are combined in many different ways, depending, of course, on the drama that is developing in front of you. So you get experience in doing these things from also the past studies. For example, I happen to have studies at the master's level, for example, in Canada, with a specialist who specialized in Mozart's operas, for example. And from there, I learned how much Mozart was influenced by the text of Da Ponte, for example, who was a great librettist. And every note, every modulation, every rhythm was contributing to the drama situation or dramatic situation that he wanted to bring out from the text. So you put all that with all this sort of in mind, and then when you are rehearsing, because then you have time for rehearsing, and you prepare everybody, and you show them what you want from this, from the solos, from the choir, from all the dialogues, from all the relations that arise between orchestra and choir, orchestra and soloists. And then you show that with your also conducting gestures, because I studied conducted professionally with professionals as well, and I know I've learned, that's how I know I was lucky to find myself where I was studying, that with different gestures you can get different, in fact,
the best
effects,
out
of course. Mm.
Well, now we're going to hear, after having that very unique opportunity to hear the composer talking about the music, now we're going to be able to hear a little bit Crystal
Sultan.
I've always been fascinated by the organ. It's a grand instrument which lends sort of gravitas to the church experience. You say that you went to Canada and you organ as your major instrument, but there must have been a moment perhaps in your childhood where you decided, gosh, this is the instrument for me.
It's true. That's exactly what happened. That was one experience in my young days when I was an altar boy. in Sigiu, where I originally come from. I remember was assisting the priest during the mass. Those days the celebration was different. They had to have an altar boy at all times during the mass. And I used to remember listening to the organ playing, for example. And I remember once I was so lost. I was waiting for the lavabo, we used to call it, where you pour water on the hands of the priest, and I was just immersed in what I was listening, and I heard Dion, and then I opened my eyes, and there was the priest waiting patiently, maybe lovingly. I was lucky at that point, it was not another nervous person, but he knew what was going on, and that's how I learned. I kept actually that love for the instrument, kept growing into me. I remember even when I was older then, and I was studying at the seminary, in the minor seminary where it used to be in Floriano, in front of the depot, there was a good organ there. And I remember I used to listen to someone playing. Of course, it would have been a major seminarian practicing on the organ. I remember I used to be just thrown off the perch. And it kept to be my love all my life until this very moment. When I listen to the organ, when I play on the organ, the world changes for me.
I'd like to ask you also about your university lecturing. Mm-hmm. You have your students, you've got your composing life, but you've also got your lecturing life. You obviously enjoy your lecturing. How do you go about that? How do you go about reaching to your students?
Yes, with my students, of course, at the university, I've been here for almost 28 years now, since 79, in fact. You can count the years probably better than I can. But I was the coordinator or the head of department, if you want to call it that way, for these last 16, 17 years as well. And I saw the program developing all throughout these years, of course, and I had other people like Charles Camilleri, like John Gallia, and Michael Laus, and lately other new, younger people came along. But I used to also always be involved with organizing the University Folk Ensemble, which you hear mainly during the graduation ceremonies or honoris causa, but also I conduct the University Vocal Ensemble during the main annual Christmas concert and annual Easter concert at St. John's Cathedral. We've been doing that all these years. And I teach harmony, I teach counterpoint, I teach analysis, and all these things are all interconnected. Like I compose, so I use form, that is analysis. So what I teach is what I practice even when I compose. I don't just speak pedantically, because that is not my way. When I teach performance, when I rehearse the choir, I am always putting into practice what I practice, what I have learned myself from these great people I had the fortune to meet abroad. And so it's always giving from what I have. And this is when this gives me a great satisfaction when I see that our students are growing and in what we teach them. In fact, we have the honor to say that many of our students, the most competent, always go abroad and
do extremely well. Yes. You're the official musician in residence, so to speak, of the cathedral and in Valletta and also Medina, as we said, and you give numerous concerts there. What are the challenges of performing in a cathedral and the satisfactions, really?
Yes. To be active in those two places, in Malta, is the highest level you can attain in Malta. We are lucky to have the Medina Cathedral and St. John's Hugh Cathedral, which, in the words of even foreign musicians that come to perform there and conduct or play the organ, they tell us how lucky we are. So, in fact, to tell you the truth, in 1979, when I had just graduated with the MASBEC and the BEd, those were the first degree and the postgraduate BEd, I had this sort of call from Malta that St. John's was becoming vacant, and I had to make a big decision there. after all that study, do I go back to Malta, back to square one, and be the resident organist? So shortly, briefly, I decided to come. And that's how I started my career at St. John's. And of course, when you are the organist at St. John's, you are automatically the organist of Imdina Cathedral as well. In fact, I used to, at that time, the maestro de cappella was Father Albert Bosch, the Augustinian, and I used to travel with him wherever the archbishop is officiating, I go there. But now I am also, for these last 8-10 years, I'm also the maestro de cappella, besides being the organist, and I am... have to conduct the main services wherever the Archbishop, besides that every Sunday, besides the services every Sunday, you also are responsible to conduct and compose also music for the main services. And main services at Imdina are, for example, Christmas night, the Conversion of St. Paul, Santa Maria in August, and there are a couple of others. But at St. John's, of course, you are regularly employed there. And that, as I have tried to explain earlier, that started when the maestro de cappella becomes the maestro de cappella of Imdina, automatically you become also the maestro de cappella of St. John's Cathedral. That story started with Francesco Azzopardi when the French, when Napoleon and the Knights left, because the Knights had their own maestro de cappella, so they left and that was stopped, and the maestro de cappella of Imdina became the chapter, took over St. John's, and automatically you are the maestro de cappella of the Maltese chapter. So the commitments are very serious. In fact, to the most important thing also to have the singers. You have to have the singers. And to have singers, they have to be committed, because you have to have them early every Sunday morning, and that is not an easy task.
Not everybody's cup of tea.
That is not an easy task, believe me. I know, my wife knows, because she is responsible for the administration, and that's the hardest thing, actually.
Well, to end off our interview, because unfortunately we've come to the end of our time, we have a lovely piece of music to play, which is taken from a collection of European sacred hymns and motets, which is included in a Miranda publication called The Great Temple, and it was added to this publication exactly to show
capture
the atmosphere of the Great Temple, which is St. John's. And
exactly.
I'd like to thank you very much, Maestro.
Thank you.
Hajar, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.